Good afternoon and welcome to Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy. We have a monthly program which is designed to bring you timely information on various energy topics of interest to Cape Cod. I'm John Burns, a retired energy efficiency program planner at the Cape Light Compact, located in the Superior Courthouse in Barnstable. My guest today is Kevin Galligan, the Energy Efficiency Program Manager at the Cape Light Compact. Kevin is also an adjunct instructor at Cape Cod Community College, where he teaches a very popular course in the fall on energy efficiency. We often take electricity for granted, as it's really just woven into the fabric of our daily lives, except, of course, when it comes time to pay for it, or when, for some reason, we lose it. Kevin and I today will briefly explore where electricity comes from. The electricity mix is changing in New England. So, Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back.
One of the things I forgot to mention in the opening was you were also a public member of the Mass Energy Facilities Siting Council. That may not be a bad place to start. Tell us about that.
Well, the siting board is connected and a part of the Massachusetts DPU, and they have a
Department of Public Utilities
up in Boston, okay. In the South Station. Mm-hmm. And it's a public entity, and they have public processes, both from, you know, utility rates and overviewing things to be sure that rates are fair and reasonable for the utility standpoint. But the siting board itself actually looks after the has oversight over the construction of large energy facilities in Massachusetts.
So new power plants.
New power plants or significant...
That's going to be a tough situation. You probably have a lot of meetings where you got unhappy people up there that have power plants being sited next to them. Is that a fair assessment?
I would agree with that and also say that every single project that the siting board, and I have to say also that the staff at the siting board are phenomenal, mm-hmm. to really do a lot of the work. What we do as board members is we do a lot of reading, okay. and we ask some questions. Sometimes they're off the wall or, you know, basically things that we have a personal interest or awareness of. I bring a lot from the energy efficiency side, but also locally here from the Cape. So we had a recent tentative decision on a certain facility transmission line upgrade proposed coming across to the Cape that I think we put in, you know, a lot of thought, a lot of good conditions, and that project will be, you know, serving us well, but we'll also be doing it with a balancing of environmental and cost and reliability concerns. And those are the things that the siting board looks out for, is to be sure that there's always a balancing of the need for the facilities with the environmental impacts and the cost. And to your point as to people that do you know, come out and let us know their thoughts when a power plant might be coming into their neighborhood, those all are fully considered.
I see. So, but it sounds to me like you're the right guy for me to ask where our electricity comes from.
It's a great topic.
It's a good topic because, you know, as we get older and older and as we become more and more used to having electricity, we just assume that electricity is going to come out of the wall when we put a plug in there.
But isn't that all it is?
Well, there's an awful lot more to it. And you've got a tremendous background in this stuff. And so if you could explain to us as if we're of the layperson who feels that you plug a plug into the wall, there's the electricity. Let's talk about what happens behind that plug and see if you can give it to us in terms that we can all understand.
I can do that.
Good.
And, I mean, always think in terms of what you do to use electricity. So, for example, and I always use this on the Cape, is when you're turning an air conditioner on in a peak day in the summer, peak meaning it's very hot, there's a lot of demand.
Everybody else has got their air conditioner on.
Everybody else is on. Think what that has to be done, because electricity moves very fast, the speed of light, essentially. And that means that when you are turning on the switch for that air conditioner, that's when electricity flows. I mean, just plugging the plug into that wall outlet, unless you turn on the power switch, you're not really consuming electricity. So once you do turn the switch on, then there is an equal match of generation from some place, whether it be the roof that you might have a photovoltaic panel locally.
Solar.
Solar. Mm-hmm. Or it may be all the way up the Cape Cod Canal at the canal plant or even further off Cape. And believe it or not...
All the way out to Ohio in some instances with the grid ties and that type of
thing. There are lots of grid ties, sure. Yeah. But no, always think of, you know, what we're doing to use electricity. And there's an instant match of supply that goes with your use of it. The one thing that's always available for you to learn how you're using that at that instant in time or over the course of a week or month is your electric meter that hangs on the outside of your house typically. And the other thing I encourage people to do is not just think of the circuit that's formed in the wall outlet to your toaster or your air conditioner or, you know, your microwave, but trace that back to your circuit breaker box, which is your safety mechanism to keep you safe in the event of power spikes both on your end or the utility end. But then think of where that goes into the wires on the street. And then we drive across the Cape, whether you, you know, drive out of my town in New Orleans, go across the Cape, you can see infrastructure that's out there that's built, we pay for,
right,
that in fact helps that air conditioner run, not only on the peak day in the summer, but every single day of the year.
And so let's get it back to a power plant. We have a number of different generating types. And what's typical for New England?
What is typical right now for New England actually is the predominance of fossil fire generating plants, referred to generally as non-renewable sources of power that are fueled by natural gas.
Okay.
It's a clean burning fuel. It's been the predominant fuel, I'd say, and continuing to grow over the last 5 to 10 years.
Right, because before that, it was much less of a factor.
It was
a factor, but it was less of a factor.
Right. And a lot of folks, you know, see the physical facilities of the grid out there, but behind the scenes, there are also what they call commercial activities, which relates to the price of oil, the price of natural gas. So the reference to the move to go to gas-powered generating plants relates to the abundance of natural gas, North American fuel, all those good things. But it also relates to the fact that oil prices and oil supply have become, let's just say, controlled by other powers beyond ourselves.
Beyond our shores in many instances, right?
Right. So really, since those 70s, the oil embargo, the utilities, and in fact, public policy has really encouraged more diversity to move us off of the oil power plants that were typical in New England in the, you know, 50s and 60s. Oil was cheap.
Right.
In fact, boilers were built to be very efficient on oil. Canal Electric Station was actually a very high efficient oil fired plant in its days in the late 60s.
And the canal plant still does run on oil, but it's got a gas capability, is that correct?
It exactly, and that's the best way to say it, because again, it was designed to be very efficient on oil.
The so-called dual fuel technologies. Yeah.
Right, okay. Right. And the gas burner aspects of that plant actually do not provide as much efficiency in operation as they would be if they were running on oil.
Okay, but do they actually run gas at that plant or not? I know they have the capability to. I'm just wondering if they actually do it.
I can't speak to the most recent couple of years.
Okay.
I know they have run
the
gas.
They have run it in the past?
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. All right. Because in my mind, I always thought, oh, that's an oil plant. Mm-hmm. I did know that there was a gas line to it. And as a matter of fact, I think you may have had a hand in getting it there, if I remember in a prior life.
It was part of the engineering group that had a hand in that, yes. And it was great to see pipeline infrastructure go in.
Sure.
And when folks do see underground natural gas lines, for example, finishing up in the Route 6A section of Brewster.
Yes.
That's another form of energy, natural gas, that we rely on. And there are significant upgrades that National Grid has made to reinforce the infrastructure. Although it's out of sight, out of mind, once the pavement's paved, it really will bode well for peak winter days.
Right. And just for those that may be listening out there that are thinking about getting natural gas, I went through the exercise last year. It was an exercise. Don't wait till September. There's a little hint from somebody that knows. If you're thinking about converting to natural gas and you've got natural gas in your neighborhood, it's like winning the lottery at this stage in the game.
Get in the queue, right?
Get in the queue right now. Call National Grid and
tell them you want to be on their list, and they'll see what they can do for you. One thing, too, to add about electricity, John, going back to when you talked about, you know, plugging into the wall outlet, and, you know, we're very fortunate, and again, the modern age of electricity has done wonders for all of us in terms of our economy, generation, productivity, all those good things, but I think, you know, for some folks, the more traumatic experience of when they think about electricity is when we don't have it.
Exactly. It's just like natural as air and water until all of a sudden it's not there. Yeah. Then what do we do? Yeah.
And there are two events that I always think back to. One, when I was just a little squirt at my grandmother's apartment in Taunton, Massachusetts, in November, I believe it was, of 1965. That was the Northeast blackout. And we learned a lot about that. I mean, I think that caused me to be as enthusiastic as I am about learning and understanding the grid and electricity and engineering. But I think the more recent one that affected a lot of folks on Cape Cod was the December 1st, 2003 blackout. And each of those events caused us to realize how much we rely
on how fragile the grid is and how much we rely on it. And and frankly, how amazing it is that we're able to keep it up as well as it has been. But it's certainly something that we need to be thinking about for our future, too.
It is. And it's also, it's a significant investment. I can say, you know, looking at the response that the grid operator for New England, referred to as ISO New England,
yes,
Independent System Operator, they were the folks that worked with the local transmission operators, National Grid, NSTAR, for example, and outlined options for how to respond to the events that triggered that December 2003 blackout. Mm-hmm. And some of those were short-term facility upgrades, and others are longer-term transmission upgrades. And they're big capital investments.
Sure. But we do learn from these events and make improvements.
And that's the thing about ISO New England, the power grid operator, and the fact that they are a very transparent organization. Mm-hmm. They're not just a facilities interconnection of what you can see, but they share an awful lot of data, whether it be real-time pricing, because we can go on ISO-NewEngland.com and you can see what the price of electricity clearing in the market right now is as opposed to that peak day in July.
Sure.
You'll see variability. But they also get all of the operators together to share what the best ways are to solve the immediate or long-term demands that we have for more electricity.
And right after the break, I'm going to ask you to give that website again so that anybody that's listening can grab a pencil and take it down, because it is fascinating to look at that. You're listening to Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy. Our guest today is Kevin Galligan, the Energy Efficiency Program Manager at the Cape Light Compact. Kevin is also an adjunct instructor at the Cape Cod Community College, where he teaches energy efficiency. And finally, and additionally, he is a public member of the Massachusetts Energy Facilities Siting Council, responsible for siting power plants and power infrastructure on the Cape. Kevin, I guess you make a lot of money doing that job, right? Or
the siting board?
Yeah. I'm kind of laughing.
I was happy to get the call or request from the governor.
Oh, nice.
I couldn't say no.
And that was your compensation, was a pat on the back from the governor, and who wouldn't want to do that? But
I mean, it's great. It's very enjoyable and rewarding.
You know what? We're darn lucky on the Cape that you did answer the call and are willing to put that kind of effort forward at no cost to us. Those are the kind of citizens we like to have, all right. Just a reminder that we're on our Spring Air Pledge Drive in order to raise the revenue to keep the station on the air. Remember, we not only need to raise $65,000 for the operating budget, we also need to raise an additional $50,000 to put a new antenna at WOMR in Provincetown. So please renew your membership or send us a pledge for the operating budget, and consider as well, if you will, a pledge to the Antenna Fund. The pledge numbers are 508-487-2619 or 1-800-921-9667. That's 508-487-2619 or 1-800-921-9667. If we each do our best, the burden will be lighter on all of us. So, Kevin, before the break, I said we would talk about the ISO New England website, where you can actually look to see at any point in time what the wholesale price of electricity is, and it can fluctuate dramatically. Usually it sits around $30 to $60, somewhere in that range, for a megawatt hour of electricity on the wholesale market. I happened to be sitting at my desk one day and saw it go to $700 plus. I think it was $790 a megawatt hour on a hot day. I took a screenshot of it because you just don't see that very often, thank goodness. But I do know it's gotten up over $1,000 a megawatt hour. So let's talk in the brief time that we have left with what that is, what the impacts are, and what we can do to mitigate that. Because I think in the future, as we get to, and I hope everybody is starting to become familiar with the term smart grid, we are going to start paying for electricity at its real cost instead of the spread out cost. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, and what's behind that?
Let's have the website first.
Right. Website is iso-ne.com. iso-ne.com. And that's the independent system operator in New England, pretty much the grid operator for all of New England. But the other thing to think about in terms of that price variability is it varies through the day. And it's driven by how our load consumption increases.
Right.
So, you know, you think of all of us at sleep, you know, from, you know, say midnight to 5 in the morning. Once we start getting up, turning on appliances, either heating or cooling our homes and offices, then that demand increases. ISO builds capacity, or basically requests folks to participate in the market to build capacity or transmission generation with a certain peak day requirement. They call it an installed capacity need. And that's really for that one peak instant in time. So the thing about us all seeing what's driving that price is if, for example, we could use less, we're actually helping ISO shave off that peak,
exactly,
which has a dramatic impact on lowering our bills. The less we use, not only on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis, but the less we can use on that peak day can save hundreds of millions of dollars
right.
a year.
So, in fact, if you implement energy efficiency in your house or your business, you actually lower your neighbor's electric bill at the same time.
Yeah, that's the capacity element. People think, you know, the power plants, you know, producing electricity with fossil fuel or whatever, and there's a direct cost for that commodity, which is the commodity cost of the energy. But there's also a capacity cost.
Right.
And that's pretty much to cover all the infrastructure cost related to delivering capacity on that peak day. So again, you're right to do that segue to energy efficiency. And I, again, highlight air conditioning because that's the peak driver for us right now. Mm-hmm. Other jurisdictions in the country may be electric heat sensitive,
sure.
but New England is currently AC low driven in the summer.
In the summertime, on a
yeah.
hot summer day,
yeah.
that's when and the shrine's going.
I would encourage people, if you see the weather's going to be really hot, you go to that iso-ne.com, look mm-hmm. at the price of power, you know, $30-$50 a megawatt at 8 in the morning. Look at it again at noontime.
Right.
And
it's
you'll see a dramatic increase.
It will. And let's talk, you know, we talked about the natural gas as being now becoming the predominant fuel for power, electric power in New England. What are some of the others? And I'd like to get into renewable energy a little bit, if we can, in the short period of time we have left.
Sure. Well, natural gas currently in the mix as of roughly 2011 is around 43%
okay.
of the New England fuel mix. And we've got a diminished proportion of oil. It's still much higher than the national level. Nuclear is about 15%. Coal is very small in New England.
Okay.
We only have currently two coal-fired operators. But then hydro and renewables, sad to say, in New England is actually lower relative to the national average. Not by much, but it's about 13% when you put hydro and renewables together versus 15% in the nation.
Okay.
So I would definitely say and encourage that although we've got great policies in place that are moving forward with more renewables, both you know, people's homes and businesses putting PV on
solar
generation on their roofs or their homes and businesses. There's a lot more we can be doing.
Why do you suppose we don't see more of that?
Well, in New England, particularly if you're looking at the major load centers of Boston, Springfield, they're a built environment. So to put...
In other words, buildings that already exist.
Right.
So if you didn't happen to orient the building correctly, then putting solar panels on it
may not be as viable.
Right, because they have to be really facing south.
If
they
should get
facing south.
One of the growing renewable generating areas of the country, take a guess. It's in the south. It's a very big state.
Florida?
No, Texas.
Texas, really.
It's the growing wind resources for this country. Yeah, oil country, you think. But wind resources
have been the
largest growth. Okay. Again, because they have large areas of land that lend themselves well.
And that's the other big consideration.
Right. Some of our density.
Yeah. Because the density of solar panels you've got to have a lot of land, and it doesn't produce a lot of energy.
Yeah,
so a good south facing roof is actually the perfect situation for a solar installation.
And there are great incentives today. Again, I'm not a renewables expert as far as installing them. There are a lot of folks on the Cape, and I'd encourage people to check them out. The Clean Energy Center in Massachusetts organizes and helps to pre-qualify vendors, as well as offers really attractive incentives.
So there are financial incentives for you to put a solar installation on your house.
They're significant.
And they're okay.
Yeah.
And where does that money come from?
All of us.
Okay.
Really, all of this energy stuff when we talk about
it. I realize nothing is free.
No. Ratepayers pony up for all of this.
Sure.
But really, when you think of the small amount on your electric bill to assist renewable energy development, which is really small.
And as we indicated, we all benefit. Even if your neighbor puts it on there, it's going to impact your bill because your neighbor is no longer straining the grid on those tough demand days.
Yeah, there is definitely a perfect fit for solar generated electricity from photovoltaics in a peak summer day with the peak demand that we put in terms of our use of electricity on the grid. So more of those, what are referred to as distributed resources, as opposed to the Canal plant or Pilgrim Nuclear. Those are referred to as central station generating plants, where some of us have photovoltaics on our roof, and we're referred to as distributed resources.
Okay. It's because it's right on site. The power is being generated at the same place it's being used. And in the few minutes that we have left, let's talk about wind. It's a touchy subject sometimes on the Cape, but wind. The Cape is actually a pretty good wind resource.
Exactly, that's the term I would definitely. Yeah. Encourage people to use. The local press has covered that project now very, very thoroughly. A lot of dialogue and conversation. Points of view have come out. I'll tell you, from our organization, the Cape Light Compact, we don't take a position on specific projects.
Right.
We do advance projects that have gone through a vetting process and gone through an RFP process, but wind resource is abundant on the Cape. The only thing I would say, just like your question earlier about local opposition to power plants,
right?
Every facility that might add to infrastructure, whether it be a transmission line, whether it be a gas pipeline, whether it be a wind project or a new power station going in, there are always pros and cons.
Yeah.
There are always environmental impacts. There are cost impacts. And, again, the thing I've learned through the siting board is, having a factual dialogue and a reasonable discussion to feel that we're advancing our overall economy and benefits for ourselves in the future, but doing it in a way that does produce the greatest benefit and minimizes the harm to anybody. Impacts are everywhere. Everything we do, we're making choices.
Absolutely. But we are seeing more and more wind turbines sprouting up here and there.
I would say I'm a little bit more cautious about Cape Cod than I would have been 4 or 5 years ago. Does the siting council, do they have a role when those, this is total ignorance on my part, but does the siting council get involved when somebody puts a turbine up?
Not at the sizes that we've seen so far, except for one project. The Cape Wind project did come before the siting board, but because of my involvement at the Cape Light Compact, I recuse myself fully from that. But a project of that size, 400, 500 megawatts, did come through the siting board, but it was for a limited aspect of the project. Because if you remember, Cape Wind really is a federally located and sited project.
Right, exactly.
So the siting board's role actually was limited to that interconnection of that facility to the local power grid.
So, so it's a certain size that really
that triggers it. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time on the program. I'm going to ask to get a commitment from you, however, and that is I'd like you to come back. There's a lot more that we can talk about. Perhaps not next month, but in the future. I'd like to have you come back and talk some more about some of the experiences that you've had. And we didn't get into energy efficiency at all, but this program has talked about energy efficiency a lot in the past. So, but thanks very much for coming. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
You've been listening to Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy. Timely topics on energy matters of interest to Cape Cod community. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to address on future programs, you can email us at focus@capelightcompact.org or call 1-800-797-6699 and let us know. You can also visit our website at www.capelightcompact.org. I'd like to thank my guest, Kevin Galligan, Energy Efficiency Program Manager at the Cape Light Compact. And I'd also like to thank our engineer, John Braden, the Station Operations Manager, for his good work in getting the program out to you. Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy is broadcast from the historic schoolhouse in Provincetown, WOMR 92.1, and in Orleans, WFMR 93.1 on your FM dial. It's also streamed on the World Wide Web at www.womr.org. I'm your host, John Burns. Thank you very much for listening. Please join us again next month, same time, same stations, and remember, use energy wisely. It's a precious and increasingly scarce resource.